all back board.
Pick up the phone, Bob Costas ringing. Next thing I know, man, Kersley's singing.
Ooh, baby, you got the touch. Take it easy, man, you're working too much. Future big, coach has said. Just as big as that bump on your head.
I was going to join in and sing some bass when a Duckworth pass hit me right in.
Welcome, and thank you for joining the 16th edition of the Blazers Edge podcast, presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your host, Chris Lucia. Now, the musical selection that you just heard was taken from the song called Bust a Bucket, which was recorded by a few of the Portland Trailblazers from the early 90s. In particular, the section of the song that you heard was the solo singing part of the late, great Jerome Kersey, who unfortunately passed away earlier this week at the age of 52. Now, I kind of grew up with the Portland Trailblazers of the late 90s and the early 2000s. So I really didn't get much of an opportunity to see Jerome Kersey play in a Portland Trailblazers uniform. However, after he retired and came back to the organization in a community ambassador role, it became pretty apparent, you know, how much he meant to the team, how much he meant to the community, and how much he meant to Blazer fans everywhere. It seems like he was always showing up in a helping out with a charity or a fundraiser or making an appearance at a local elementary school or giving a speech to kids. And, you know, I was listening to the press conference yesterday with Terry Porter and Harry Glickman and a number of other all-time Blazer greats from over the decades, just recollecting fond memories and stories about Jerome Kersey. And to a person, it seemed like it was his humility, his work ethic, how he treated everybody. It seemed to come up with every person that spoke about Jerome Kersey yesterday. And I was also listening to some of the local sports talk stations, and a lot of the local shows had open lines for callers to call in and just talk about Jerome Kersey. And I heard dozens of calls yesterday, of people, you know, in the city of Portland who, you know, when going about town, interacted with Jerome Kersey because he was always out in the community. And every story I heard was just, you know, Jerome Kersey always had time to stop and talk. And he always stayed until the last autograph was given. And, you know, every time he saw some young kids, he'd ask, how are your grades in school? And he would chat it up with parents and with fans. And it always seems like he had time for fans. And he knew and he understood the kind of impact that he could have on a community like Portland. And so our thoughts and condolences go out to Jerome Kersey's family and the Portland Trailblazers family as everyone's mourning the loss of an all-time great Portland Trailblazer. In other Blazer news, the team made a trade, bringing in guards Aaron Aflalo and Alonzo G in exchange for Will Barton, Thomas Robinson, and a couple of future draft picks. The interview portion of this podcast was actually tracked after the All-Star break, but before the trade deadline. So we actually didn't get a chance to talk trades, and we didn't really go over the All-Star break because Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons, who host the Tuesday edition of the podcast, covered most of that in episode 15. So if you want to check that out, you can go to iTunes and check out episode 15 of the Blazers Edge podcast. And that's Dave and Phil. And they cover most of the All-Star break and they talk about kind of the week ahead for the Blazers. This week, because of the extended All-Star break and not much Blazer talk going on, I decided to have kind of a fun guest, kind of a guy who's been involved with Blazer lore, kind of a tertiary member that most Blazer fans are probably aware of, but probably don't know a ton about. So I thought it'd be interesting to get him on the podcast and kind of pick his brain a little bit. But before we get started with that, I just wanted to talk a little bit about Blazers Edge Night 2015. If you're not sure what Blazers Edge Night is, it's a pretty cool event that's put on by Dave Deckard, the managing editor for BlazersEdge.com. For the last 7 or 8 years, he's put out the call to Blazers Edge readers to raise funds and donations, which go toward tickets for underprivileged youth in the Portland area to attend a Trailblazers ball game. This year, the game is going to be March 30th against the Phoenix Suns at the Moda Center. For $13 to $16 per ticket, you can help out sending a kid or their chaperone to the game. You know, it's pretty cool because there's a lot of kids out there who are already Blazer fans who just don't really have the circumstances and the opportunities to attend a game in person. Or there could be kids out there who aren't yet Trailblazers fans, and this would be their first opportunity to see a game in person. This could be the first sporting event one of these kids has been to. It touches kids' lives in a number of different ways. Every year, Dave always has stories from the chaperones and the kids talking about how much it meant to them and how cool this event is. And it's been going on now for almost a decade, and it started out raising, I think, you know, a couple hundred tickets per year, and eventually the goal was set at 500. Last year it was 750, which you know, which the Blazers Edge readers collected, and this year we're trying to raise enough funding for 1,000 tickets for the kids and their chaperones to go to the March 30th game this year. Dave released an update earlier this week that said there were 400 tickets already purchased, and we have just about 5 weeks to go until Blazers Edge night. So if you want to help out and get involved, again, it's $13 to $16 per ticket, and you can learn more about that at blazersedge.com. Most of our posts right now at the bottom, you'll be able to find a link for Blazers Edge night. Click through there. You can donate online. You can donate by calling the ticket office. There's a number of ways to help out. So if you want to get involved, don't hesitate to check out blazersedge.com, Blazers Edge Night 2015. As always, I want to encourage you to get in contact with the Blazers Edge podcast if you have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas for guests. If you just want to drop us a line and let us know how we're doing, it's always appreciated. You can do so at blazersedgepodcast@gmail.com. And with that, let's go ahead and get started. If you've been watching any of the Blazers television broadcasts the last several years, or if you've gone to the Moda Center to catch a game recently, you've probably seen my next guest, possibly on the Jumbotron. His name is Rob Ems, a.k.a. Free Throw Guy. Rob, how's it going today, man?
Doing well, Chris. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually really excited to have you on. You know, like most of the guests that I have on, I've had several in mind, and you're definitely one of the dudes. So the whole free throw guy thing, man, for those who are uninitiated, I find it hard to believe that there's very many Blazer fans that would be listening to a Blazer-centric podcast at this point who wouldn't know who free throw guy is. But if you could just give us a bit of an outline about what it is that you do and why you're known as free throw guy.
Sure. Well, my C's and seats that I have are in section 117, which is directly behind the hoop. If you're watching TV, it'll be on the far left-hand side on the Blazer bench side. And basically, when the other team is shooting free throws, my goal is to get the attention of that shooter and try to help them miss their shot.
And so you put together a different shirt for every single opponent?
I wouldn't say it's every single one, but, you know, it's almost every single one. You know, there's a few, sometimes there's, you know, some sort of error with my t-shirt guy. But when it works out, you know, 9 out of 10 for sure are a new shirt every night with some sort of shtick, if you will, or a picture that's, you know, trying to be sort of funny geared to someone on the opposing team.
Okay, so let's give an example then of what a game night might consist of for you. Okay. Let's say that the Houston Rockets are coming to town.
Okay.
I did a little bit of background research. There's been a couple articles written about you. I understand that you do a little bit of research about the teams ahead of time.
Definitely, yeah. So say the Houston Rockets are coming to town, which they are on March 11th, I believe. You know, I'm going to look at the stats of the average for the team, you know, what their actual free throw percentage average is. And then I'm going to look at each individual player's free throw percentage to see where I might be more effective. Then I try to go through my memory banks of, like, you know, have I said something to a specific player that might, you know, have resonance or they might remember or something of that sort. And, you know, like for instance, I would say my effectiveness on James Harden is not very much, but I really like talking to him about his beard. So I make sure, you know, that I note the beard and Dwight when he's applicable. And, you know, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, Terrence Jones too, Portland native. So there's different ways to come about it.
Okay, so you get your research done, you understand what you need to do to get under that a specific player's skin. You get a custom shirt made for most games. You're six rows up.
Yes, right? Correct. Yeah, in FF in 117.
Okay, so how did all this get started?
Well, I had quarter season seats in four different sections back in 2006-2007 season, which would have been the B-Roy and LaMarcus rookie year. And one of the quarter seasons is the seat that I have now. And when I was down there, I realized that when the other players were shooting and, you know, they give out the cheer sticks or logo banger things. And I was like, well, I'm right here. I might as well start yelling at them. So there was probably most of 2007 where I was yelling at them and being really into it. And then at the end of the 2006-07 season, I was at the select a seat event and basically attempting to move up to full-time on 100% on the seat that I'm in now. And Sherry Heiner, she was the owner of Mattress World and Mattress World Northwest, came up to me, and this is right as, you know, they're letting people, they had just done like a little intro speech and they're letting the fans go down to the seats to select their seat. And so she comes up to me and she goes, "Hey, I know who you are. You're that guy." And I was like, and I cut her off right as she said that. And I said, "No," like I clearly recognized her as the Mattress World lady. And I was like, "No, I know who you are." And she goes, "No, you're that free throw guy." And I was like, "Well, I get to keep." I literally went like that, and I was like, "I get to keep that." So I kept the name. And I just was like, all right, well, then that's kind of my thing or whatever. But I didn't have the shirt at this point or anything other than like the people right down in 117 and 118 kind of knowing that I'm trying to razz up the other team. So then we get to December 25th, Christmas of 2008, and my family does gag gifts. So that year it was my mother's gag gift to give to me. So I open it up first, and what is it? It's the first free throw guy shirt ever. She handmade it like with iron-on letters. So she was like, and we played Denver that night. So she was like, you know, she's like, the mattress lady, she always calls you free throw guy. Like, you should put this shirt on and see what happens. And I was like, and I didn't really process that she wanted me to wear it to the game. I was like, because it doesn't have any blazer things on it. It just said free throw guy. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'll just have that as a shirt. And she's like, no, wear it to the game. And when you do the free throw thing, do it. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then it just sort of stuck. And now I have shirts and the whole thing.
When did you first start getting on the air, like getting on the Jumbotron?
Christmas night. Yeah,
that was the first time?
First time. I mean, I think I was on earlier 2008 and a little bit in 07, but just as like, I wore a Blazer Maniac. They threw the shirts out and they said Blazer Maniac on them. And I had one of those and I wore that for most of 07 and 08. So I was definitely, I think I got up on the big screen once or twice, but it was never like a thing. And then Christmas night, 2008, it became the thing. So,
are you aware of when the television broadcast cameras are on you?
I can tell for ESPN and TNT because they have a separate spotlight that comes in my upper corner of my eye. But for Comcast Sportsnet or Channel 8, which is, you know, the Comcast Sportsnet broadcast, no, I have no idea at all. If ever, sometimes I get home and I'll DVR the game and I'll be like, and I'll randomly be like, oh, that's awesome. There I was. But like, I have no idea when I'm there and except for when that other light comes on, which is the TNT Thursday night games, and then the ESPN, I think, Wednesday and Friday. And then I don't think we have a Sunday ESPN game this year, but we have in years past.
Do you go extra crazy when you know the national cameras are on you?
Actually, I'd say probably a little bit less crazy.
What's the reason for that?
Just to kind of keep the reins on it a little bit and maybe give a little bit less national exposure. Because, I mean, I get one side of it that, you know, you want free throw guy to be sort of a big thing. And you know, in Blazer world, I love it to be a big thing. But honestly, it's more effective if they don't think about it and they don't talk about it. And it's just like a sort of a passover thing. And then when it comes down to it, you miss that free throw, and that's really where it counts. So that's kind of where I lean a little bit more towards the you know, what can we get down the road?
You like to keep a low profile a little bit.
A little bit.
Nationally.
Not, you know, I just try to keep it a little bit more under wraps.
Okay. So before we get too far into free throw guy, can we talk a little bit about your personal life a little bit?
Sure.
I go to the games typically with my mom. I think she has the Rivals pack, so we get to see like all the Northwest Division teams and like the Lakers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I watch a lot of the games on Comcast with my friends and with my family and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like we talked about earlier, you do get a decent amount of airtime. And one thing that always comes up is that dude, he's at every single game. He sits six rows up behind the visitors' free throw.
Well, it's the home end, and you know the visiting team can choose which way they go first half.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm on the Blazer end, 117.
You have great tickets, and they're probably not the cheapest tickets in the entire world.
They're not the cheapest tickets in the world.
and one thing that typically comes up is that dude's always there. He's got great seats. He seems like he looks like a pretty young dude.
I'm not that young anymore. I used to be young.
What exactly is it that you do when you're not free throw guy that enables you to do this?
Well, I do several different things. One, I play the market as much as I can.
Does that mean trading stocks and...
Stocks and selling options. That's kind of the goal. And my late grandfather ran a business doing basically that, and was very successful at it, and taught me a fair amount. I wouldn't say he taught me everything he knew, but he taught me a fair amount. And then my dad is a flight instructor. He instructs basically any sort of small personal aircraft, but he has sort of a niche in float planes that land on water. So I help him out with anything to do with his float planes and his business, and that's another thing I do.
And you have your hand in a couple other projects as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. I co-produce and announce for a late night talk show called Who's the Ross every Tuesday night at Dante's.
Okay, cool. So Tuesday night Dante's, you can catch. Rob free throw guy, would you call it a host, maybe?
I'm not the host, I'm the announcer. The host is actually Aaron Ross, and it's basically a late night talk show, sort of like you're watching a cross between Jimmy Fallon and Saturday Night Live.
All right, so back to free throw guy then.
Yes.
How often do you get recognized in the streets of Portland? I'm assuming, do you live somewhere near downtown, or...?
I live out on the west side, but I mean, you know, if I have Blazer gear on, then it's much more of a giveaway than if I don't. If I don't have Blazer stuff on, you know, maybe one out of five times or something, 10 times that I'm out. But if I have Blazer gear on, or if I have the shirt on and I have a huge sign on, then that's its own thing. But I try to only wear the shirt, you know, during the game. Like, I don't just like cruise around with the shirts on.
Mm-hmm. I was doing a little bit of research before the show, and I came across an article from the Columbian by Matt Calkins about 4 years ago, I think, and it kind of painted it out as if you were getting kind of a negative backlash Was that an issue at first with the free throw guy thing, and is that still occurring?
It's a constant issue.
You get negative backlash from people?
Oh, all the time.
Like what kind of things?
Anything from people yelling and screaming at me, telling me I'm a bad fan, to being physically attacked.
Literally physically attacked.
Literally physically attacked. I have a nice scar on the top of my head from a bottle being thrown at me.
Well, I wish the podcast listeners could see the video, but describe that altercation.
I was in the parking structure leaving after a fan fest in 2011, which was in December, unfortunately, because of the lockout season, leaving, and there were some gentlemen who clearly did not like free throw guy, waited till I was at a moment where they had an advantage over me in height, and threw a bottle 20, 25 feet down, you know, down over, and hit me in the head and smashed it, and that was that.
Wait, at FanFest in the Rose Garden?
In the parking structure.
Well, that's pretty brutal.
it was brutal. If you check out my Facebook, there's a bunch of old pictures of me bloody and stuff with my free throw guy gear on.
What's it like online? Do you have a Twitter?
I have a Twitter. I don't use it very much. Facebook and Instagram have kind of been easier for me.
What's like the response on Facebook and Instagram? Is that usually pretty positive?
It's generally positive. There definitely are the dissenters. It's easier for me to keep them away on the Facebook because I can add and delete who I want, so it's much easier to control. Instagram, you know, yeah, there are definitely dissenters, and you know, I can understand people dissenting and, you know, thinking that a basketball game is much more like a tennis match or a golf tournament.
Well, give me the best argument you've received as to why free throw guy is a stupid concept, if you can come up off the top of your head.
In a nutshell, basically, if a fan was to distract the other team, it's sort of not the best gamesmanship. And that you're not allowing the team, the players, to truly influence the game 100%. But also, you know, the officials are a part of that as well. So,
isn't that the point of having 20,000 fans of one particular team in a home arena?
I call it a home court advantage, but I can see where, you know, there's at least a room to have a verbal discussion on it. And you know, see that there could be more than one side to the issue for sure.
Let's look at the context here. If we could just get into it a little bit. I mean, yeah. The organization itself is handing out, are they called Thunder Sticks?
I want to say they're either called Cheer Sticks or Logo Bangers. I've heard both. I don't know which is technically appropriate, but it's the self-inflatable air sticks that you bang together to make a noise.
Mike Rice calls them the Wigglies, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, I mean, you have the organization handing those out. They say Trailblazers on them, and they're only handed out to the sections that are directly behind the free throw line.
That's
so
correct.
Clearly, the idea is for the fans to be creating as much noise and distraction as possible for the free throw shooter.
That's kind of what I deduced out of the scenario. Yep.
So I just don't understand the argument how you're doing any disservice when it's being something that's openly encouraged by the organization.
And that's, I'm pretty sure that's where we are, because Mr. Allen, Mr. Olshe, hear every word that I say every single night. And I know if they really were, put off by it, that I'm pretty sure they would have just shut it down.
So you're in the section that is, I guess you're what, five seats up from Olshe and Paul Allen?
Yes, and Mr. McGowan too. They're the front row in 118, so they're on the other side of the hoop, but I'd say they're no more than maybe 20 feet from me, something like that, maybe 25. They're definitely closer than the actual free throw shooter. And I know that the shooters can hear me pretty much word for word. So I'm, you know, assuming that half that distance, you'd be able to hear it as well.
How often do the actual players acknowledge what you're doing back there?
Oh, I mean, if I'm giving it my all, a fair amount. Some of the players like what I do more than others. Some of them think it's more than it is, and like that I'm, I mean, some of them really think that, like, how could this guy, like, you know, how is this even possible? And all I'm trying to do is just, you know, support my team and be as vocal as I can be during that period of time to hopefully make that free throw attempt different than other free throw attempts they've had in the past.
So an opposing free throw shooter will come up to the line and they'll see what you're doing back there, and they'll see it as some kind of an unfair advantage that the home team has? Or
I mean, that would be partially their argument. I wouldn't even say so much that it would be other teams. I've even had fans from other teams be like, you know, we love our own team, but, you know, that's awesome, dude. You're killing it. But the actual dissent comes from Blazer fans. Not many, but a smaller percentage of Blazer fans who really are in this sort of... I think some fans feel that that attending a NBA basketball game is more like attending a golf event or a tennis event, in which you do not engage as a fan verbally or, you know, sound wise until it is deemed as an appropriate time, i.e., you know, after the player has the ball and driving down the fairway, or when the tennis play is done.
Yeah, I mean, so with it, if we're talking about a golf tournament or a tennis match,
right?
There's some pretty common, I don't know if they're even written rules, but it's pretty well understood that when you go, you're pretty much quiet for the golfers and for the tennis players. This is a basketball game, and like we went over earlier, even the organization is handing out the noisemakers. So I don't get how you could put basketball into a golf or a tennis context. It just doesn't make that much sense to me.
I would agree with you on that, and that's pretty much why I keep doing what I'm going to do.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Has the organization ever approached you about working with you on anything?
No, they have not. The most I've ever got was I got Paul Allen one time to turn around in his seat and give me a thumbs up. That's it.
Literally the most acknowledgement from the Portland Trailblazers is Paul Allen turning around and giving a thumbs up.
That is correct. This year I'm in the commercial, and they just said free throw guy before the dancing lady, but they didn't tell me they were going to use that or do anything, which is perfectly fine. I mean, they're it's their video, and also it even says on the back of your ticket, you know, when you're there, anything they record is their game to use. So I wasn't upset at all. I was actually stoked that I was on there, but they didn't tell me I was going to be on there. I didn't know. I just turned on the TV, and I'm like, oh, there I am. So, and like, people were like, when is this coming out? How did you not know? And I'm like, well, I don't produce it, so I'm not going to know.
So the arm motions when you're back there, they look to me to be pretty sporadic and off time. And right. I'm guessing that's kind of intentional to kind of have a juxtaposition with everyone else's arms kind of doing one general motion, and you kind of just do this kind of disjointed
thing. Kind of. Yeah, yeah. And like, I don't like practice that or anything like that. It just happens. And like, I don't even really know how it happened the first time. It just, my arms just started going, and like, I don't think about it. Like, all I know is I want them to see my hands, and then I try to, you know, pull up my sleeve on one side and not on the other, and, you know, just try to make it different from any free throw they've ever had so that it's a completely different experience. And then if they're shooting two or three free throws, where I think I honestly have the most impact is really in between what I'm saying to them and, you know, telling them how many misses they've had and celebrating if they have missed. And I think that that's more kind of where I have a little bit more leeway into their minds.
Do you do anything unique with your arms or what you're shouting for like specific guys? I mean, I guess, you know, we talked about, you say things about James Harden's beard, but like in terms of your motions for specific players, do you go out of your way?
Well, yeah. Okay. So like, certain different shooters have different motions, and it's more about their eyes than it is about their motion. A lot of shooters will have some sort of dribble or, you know, thing they're doing with the ball. Then they look at the floor right below where the hoop is. Then they go up to the hoop, and then they go into the shooting motion. If they do that, I really try to make sure my hands are ready to go right when they're going from floor to rim. So as they're moving past where I am in their eye line, I want to draw their attention as much as I can.
So, are you breaking down game take?
Yeah, and I remember a lot of the shooters. And, like, I mean, I remember, like, 3 years ago, Kobe Bryant, he missed, like, three or four or something, right, doing his normal form. And then I was like, well, Kobe, I was like, you're so good, you just got to change your form, man, because you're looking at the floor, then you're looking at the rim, and I'm getting you. So you got to change it up. And you can just see him the next two, and he made two in a row. I'll give him that. But he just, like, refused to look up, and he's just rocking back and forth, and then finally went up and just looked at me afterwards. I was like, well, at least you figured it out. I mean, I'm only a fan.
So what happened with Amari Stoudemire a couple of years ago? I guess he got teed up.
Yeah, so this would have been when he was still in Phoenix. So this was, you know, probably,
I think, 2011, maybe 2012.
Yeah, I was going to say 5 years ago, probably. So like 2010, I have to place the date. But basically, there was a series of exchanges between he and I as he was running up and down the court. And one of the exchanges, it started with a foul where we were shooting at our end. So the crowd is relatively quiet, and Amari is on the lower block, and he's right in front of me. And I yelled Amari, I go, Amari, I was like, you think you're so good. I was like, you think you're so good, you wear number one. I was like, you wear number one, and you got these goggles on. I was like, do you think you're Lance Armstrong? And he just looks at me like, what? And then go foul, come down, go back to the other end. You know, a couple minutes go by. I was like, Amari, you look a little winded, man. You got to get over on the bench so you can ride a bike and think that you're going somewhere. And like, he just didn't like that at all. So another foul go down, you know, other end foul back down at our end. And Amari's there. And then I decided I was going to go with one of my favorite movies as from a child, Top Gun, which sort of dates me. But I get, you know,
I know this one.
So I gave him the line of, your ego writes checks your body can't cash. And then he was like, what? And then I stood up and said, your ego writes checks your body can't cash. And then he dropped a line that I won't say on the podcast, which resulted in a technical foul.
That's probably my favorite line from that movie, by the way.
It's one of the best ones, and it applied because he was making so much money, and yet at that point not really getting Phoenix to that next level that they thought they were going to go to. This might have been the year they were in the Western Conference Finals. It might have not. Couldn't quote you.
My understanding is that you will, A, shy away from things that are too personal with the player.
Definitely.
And you also don't use anything that would be inappropriate for children's ears. Is that right?
Yeah, I make sure I don't swear. I don't say anything that's, that, you know, nothing that my grandma wouldn't want to hear, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, I'll talk to a player about their shoe choice or, like, you know, if they have, like I'll always tell them to tuck their jersey. And, I mean, technically you're supposed to get a technical foul if you're playing with your jersey out. So, like, I'll make sure, you know, your jersey's in, your shorts are an inch above the knee, that kind of thing. You know, oh, you got a compression sleeve on your right wrist, but not on your left, you know, something like that. But I won't talk about, you know, your family.
Oh, you're cutting out.
Let me start over.
All right, you're back.
Okay, sorry. I was going to say, I'm sorry, I must have a really bad connection. I am on Comcast, so I have high speed, but I am on Wi-Fi right now, so.
That makes two of us.
Okay. So anyway, I'll talk to a player about, you know, their choice of shoe or, you know, how they wear their jersey or something, you know, to do with the game, but I won't talk about their personal or private life or who they are as a person off the court.
If I gave you 2, 3, 4 guys off the top of your head, could you tell me something that you might yell out about them?
Sure.
Okay, let's start with Raymond Felton.
Cupcake.
Patrick Beverley.
Oh, man, I just don't like the guy very much. I mean, he's just a bad attitude.
So that's what you'd say, hey.
Bad attitude.
Hey, Patrick, you got a bad attitude, buddy.
Mr. Bad Attitude.
Anthony Davis.
I just do this.
Oh, for the listener who can't see, he's doing
it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Basically mocking his elegant pelican-shaped eyebrow.
Lance Stevenson.
Ooh, Lance. Oh, what would I yell at Lance? I kind of like Lance.
He blew in LeBron's ear.
Yeah.
You could incorporate that somehow.
Yeah, I could. If I was going with Lance right now, I'd probably just say, MJ made you sign with Charlotte? Like, you like MJ that much that you're going to derail your career?
You chose MJ over Larry Bird?
There you go, right? Are you
kidding me, dude?
Yeah.
let's do one more. Let's make it interesting. Actually, let's say, is there a player that you have always wanted to mock when he's at the free throw line, but you just haven't had a chance for whatever reason? Like LeBron James, I think he's sat out the last, has he sat out the last 2 games he's played in Portland, maybe?
No, he was here this year, November 4th, I want to say.
So you got LeBron James.
And LeBron's good. A player that I've never gotten to do the thing to. I can't really think of one in particular that, like, I haven't gotten to.
What about, like, national announcers?
Oh, no.
Do you ever try to get their attention?
Because they're really, you know, in their headsets and they're at mid-court. And, they're really kind of doing their thing away from me. I would say my favorite player to razz is Chris Paul, because he's probably my least favorite player in the NBA, specifically because of his attitude. And when he comes here, I just call him Captain Complain. And as soon as he starts yelling at the ref, especially when they're up 7 to 10 points, I just stand up and salute him. And I just call him Captain Complain. And then when he shoots his free throws, I do the Carlton dance, ask him where Uncle Phil is, you know, like, where's Will? How's Will going to get you out of this? I don't know. And he doesn't get it. And then I'm like, well, you know how Cliff? And I was like, you look like Carlton. And I'm like, come on, Chris. So, but yeah, he's definitely the guy I'd get the most razz out of. Now, he doesn't necessarily miss his free throws. He still shoots like 88, 89%. So I'm not going to get a Chris miss, but I really want Chris to miss.
I had tickets like behind the visitor's bench in 2006 to a Sixers game. So I was like 3 rows up from the visitor's bench. Okay. And at the time, Kyle Korver was on the team. So my go-to for that one was Ashton Kutcher.
He's basically half Ashton Kutcher, half Carrot Top. I mean, if you
explain the Carrot Top.
Put them together, which was actually the focus of my shirt from Atlanta from this year, which was just a mesh of them together. And it's like, you know, their crazy child is Kyle Korver.
So that's what you would give Kyle Korver, is Ashton Kutcher, Carrot Top.
No, definitely. Yeah.
I follow you on Facebook, and I've noticed occasionally that you let people know that you have the ticket sitting next to you available for purchase.
The 2 seats next to me, yeah.
So do you buy season tickets for all 3 seats, and then you sell those 2 individually per game?
That's the goal, is to sell them individually for each game.
So how exactly does that work? Do you just advertise it on Facebook a couple days before, or what?
I do that. I also have a fair amount of friends that come to games throughout the year. So, you know, like when the season starts, there's a few that are already gone to begin with. And then when they're available, and I want to make sure that I'm able to, share those with people that want to share in an amazing game experience. And my thing is that the Blazers used to have it as sort of a set price for each section, and then it went to a tiered system, and then it went to a system where they're actually sort of updating the prices every couple weeks. So my goal is I sell the tickets for face value. So it's to the penny. If you were going to buy that ticket from the Blazers box office, that's what you're paying me. So my goal is to never, you know, rip off any fan, but it would be the same price that you'd pay if you were getting it from the box office. So that's kind of where I can make a little bit, give people a good deal where you're never paying over face value, and you get to sit in the sixth row and then enjoy a game.
So people know that they're going to be on television and on the Jumbotron. Do they make their own shirts and get fired up and help you out with the free throw routine?
So I encourage them to do so if they want. I can't guarantee that they'll be on TV or on the Jumbotron, as the Blazers don't have any deal with me and I don't necessarily know when I'm on the TV. But I do know that, you know, people do get a fair amount of enjoyment being like, all right, you're going to watch, you know, the third quarter, and you're probably going to see me on TV. So, if people that buy the seats want to make a shirt, whatever, you, as long as it's family appropriate, I support it.
Now, I saw in the article that I was reading before doing this interview that 2005, 2006, the year before that you started doing the free throw guy thing, or I guess 2 years before, it was something like 76% on one side of the basket for visitors shooting free throws, and then 76.1% on the other side for the Habs. Mm-hmm. So they were shooting relatively evenly on both ends of the court before you kind of showed up. And then there was a little bit of research later on that kind of said that they, during the second half when they had you behind the basket, they were shooting worse. Now, is that something that's continued over the years? Is that something that you actually track yourself?
It is something I track. My effectiveness percentage has waned over that time. At one point, I was about 7% ahead. Now I'm about 1.5% to 2% ahead. So that's definitely come down. But a portion of that has been the fact that the other team has chosen to come at my end first half, where traditionally it was always the second half. So teams generally, it sort of skews the numbers a little bit when they're coming at me first half. There's generally fewer attempts in the first half of games than second half of games. Also, it's easier to get a higher percentage if you're only shooting, say, one or two free throws, and you make both, you look percentage-wise, you're doing great, where, you know, you miss one, you go from 100 down to 67 instantaneously. So it sort of has a relative effect. But yes, the percentage has definitely waned in the last couple years.
Do you believe that you've had a genuine impact on opponents' free throw shooting?
Definitely, yeah. I wouldn't say every single free throw. I wouldn't say every single time. I wouldn't say every single miss that they miss is due to me. Some people think that every miss that happens is either, I think, is because of me. Not at all. I would say of the misses in a game, there's probably one, and that's the idea of the minus one that's on my shirt. Is my goal is whatever they were going to make and whatever they were going to miss, I want them to miss one more than they were going to miss anyway. So if they were going to miss, like if their percentage is 75%, and they're going to make 3 of 4, I want that fifth free throw to be a miss and then drop you to 60 from 75. That's what I want. And obviously, I want every single free throw to miss no matter what. If the other team's shooting a free throw, I want 0 for whatever. But, you know, the goal is to get them to miss one more than they would.
So you're six rows up. You can hear quite a bit of the action, what's going on, right?
I can hear everything that's at my half, for sure.
You can hear individual players?
Oh, guaranteed, yeah. Word for word. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I yell at all the players every night, like, you know.
Who's the loudest Blazer on the court?
I'd say Myers Leonard's the loudest.
Myers Leonard?
Yep.
Yelling at the ref, yelling at teammates?
No, just the way his voice carries. It carries more so. So he isn't necessarily trying to be the loudest, and it's more about him calling out defensive calls in the key. But he is definitely the loudest as far as what I hear from players. But some players talk more than other players, and Myers is kind of a talker to a point. He kind of muddles to himself a little bit, but he's definitely the one you physically hear.
Who has the most obnoxious and one scream? Like after they go up and they make a basket and they don't draw the foul necessarily, you know how players go, and one.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's obnoxious. Wesley, you definitely hear and one, but he won't do it unless he knows he was fouled and deserves a foul shot. So
it's not every time.
It's not every time. And if there's a foul called, he's probably not going to yell it. He's going to yell and one on the no call where it's like, I mean, come on, man, that's a foul. Like, that's where it should be, the and ones. I hear Damian a lot where on his takes where, you know, he does the B-Roy sort of yell, the foul and the, you know. And mm-hmm. and obviously you're trying to draw the contact, sort of sell that a little bit, so you're going to make that sound. Damian definitely does that the most that I hear of, but you know, it'll happen from any player. And if I was doing it and I'm pushed a little bit, I'm probably going to do it to try to sell, get a call.
Off the top of your head, can you name one of or a couple of the most obnoxious opposing players in terms of you know, yelling after basket or, you know, politicking with the refs? I guess aside from Chris Paul.
Aside from Chris Paul, Captain Complain.
Right.
I would say Reggie Evans he's just obnoxious. Like, the guy, you're just like, dude, go sit down and shut up, man. Like, just stop talking. You're gonna get more calls by going and playing D and not saying a word. And let's see who else. Rudy Gay, he kinda has this I mean, I'm sure he'd define it as just a swagger, but he kind of has this semi-arrogance about him. And when things aren't going well, he really he seems to put it on everyone else and not on himself. So that's kind of a thing. Russell Westbrook as well. He's very vocal, and, like, you know, he'll pound his chest at me, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff. And I just tell him that, you know, I'm fortunate that he does play basketball, because at least when he's playing basketball, he has to wear a uniform and look respectable.
What about DeMarcus Cousins? Did you notice that he's better this year than in the past? Because there's a lot being made of that nationally.
He's doing a lot better. I want to say 2 years ago, I was yelling at him because he just wasn't playing D at all. And I was like, dude, you got to go play for the Niners, man. I was like, you and Vernon Davis, dude? I was like, you guys would be great. And he kind of looks over at me, does the Heisman. And I was like, well, dude, it'd be so great, because then you can just play offense. You don't have to play defense at all. You just, you know, you got one task. You're going to catch that ball. You're going to come down, score touchdowns.
So, have you ever – sorry, go ahead.
So, yeah. So he sort of got that I was making fun of him and saying, you're so awesome offensively. Where's the D, man? Like, you're just standing there and fouling people. But he has definitely stepped it up this year for sure, 100%.
Have you ever been able to draw the attention of the opposing head coach or any members of the coaching staff?
Not that I can, like, directly tell from that far. When we played Dallas in the playoffs, which would have been 2011, I want to say, Mark, I was at both ends. So a lot of people think that I'm at both ends a lot. There were actually only two games in which I was actually at both ends, and both of those were in the playoffs in 2011. Mark Cuban doesn't like free throw guy. Just doesn't.
Really?
Now, if free throw guy was a Dallas Mavericks fan, I have a feeling Mark Cuban would like free throw guy. But currently, Mark Cuban, not a fan of free throw guy. And one of my cousins was actually just on Shark Tank about a month ago now, and it was just interesting to see her and him on the same stage and him supporting her. And I was like, whatever you do, just make sure you don't say you know me, because he won't offer you a penny. Which she didn't actually end up making a deal with him on the show, but I was, you know, I was just sort of being funny, but I was like, whatever you do, don't mention me.
Cuban, actually, I think he came out, there was a couple articles over the course of that playoff series where he was kind of complaining about Blazer fans, I think, throwing stuff at him. Or
not the throwing stuff at him. I would just yell at him, and he definitely did not like free throw guy.
He was publicly talking about the fans at the Rose Garden at the time,
right,
about how they were too obnoxious or whatever the case may be.
Yes, the late Rose Garden.
So I guess we're getting close to the end here, Rob, but I do want to let listeners know, if they're interested in following you on social media, how can they get a hold of you on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or however it is that people can get a hold of you?
On Instagram and on Twitter, it's @RobFreeThrowGuy. Facebook, however, isn't letting me use Free Throw Guy anymore. So it's just my name, which is Rob Ems, which is my legal name. So I had it on there as Rob Free Throw Guy since I made the account, but they just in the last week and a half made me change it back to my name because they didn't feel that Free Throw Guy was an actual real thing. And I was like, well, okay, I'll put my real name on there, no problem. So I did.
So if people want the opportunity to maybe sit next to you at a game, they can follow you on those social networks, and you occasionally will put up offers for the tickets next to you.
Definitely, yeah. That's right. And if anybody has any inquiries, I have probably 3 or 4 of the remaining games gone already, but I definitely have 7 or 8 that are available, and they all range in price depending upon who we're playing. So they're definitely much more reasonable. When we're playing a team with a less successful record.
And if people want to check the show out that you're working with, that's Tuesday night at Dante's?
Yes, that is Who's the Ross, Tuesday night, 10 o'clock at Dante's. It's a late night talk show, kind of a combo mesh between Saturday Night Live and The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Awesome, Rob. I really appreciate you coming on the Blazers Edge podcast today.
Thank you very much to you, Chris, and to Blazers Edge for having me.
All right. Take care, man.
Thank you. Go Blazers.
And that's a wrap for episode 16 of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm Chris Lucia. I would like to thank you for joining us today. You can check back next Tuesday and hear Phil and Dave. I'll be releasing a podcast at the end of the week.